exploring some of the more common copyright myths and folklore. Copyrights can often be misunderstood protections that lead to highly undesirable results when incorrectly implemented. An important consideration throughout is claiming, or even owning, the rights to any work, may lay a foundation for the owner to then start pursuing arising copyright violators. Yet, the holding of such rights does not inherently protect, safeguard, nor automatically restrict the myriad of real-world violations that bad actors, consciously, or otherwise, may actually perform.
Quick list. There are various international copyright treaties and WIPO-related copyright clearance centers, which share a range of practical filing points. The following short list is written from an American legal standpoint. 1. It's fair game if public. There are time limits, usually around 95 years, from first registration, as well as questions of when or if copyright protection was registered, and whether this protection has subsequently been renewed. 2. Use the postal service. Mailing oneself a copy of the document, or work, proves that one did this action at a certain time. This being the date that is stamped on the associated envelope. In this instance, though, the question of proving authorship can remain unanswered. 3. Registration is not required. There are some automatic protections for confirmed, tangible expressions of work. If discussing an idea or concept, for example, which someone else may have taken and used, then the other person could copyright their representation of such earlier discussed work, without ascribing credit to anyone else. 4. No permission is needed for limited use. Use and implementation of any copyrighted work is more important than how much or how many. A fair use rationale is always open for interpretation, and factors in, one's intention. There are essentially no broadly applicable, or commonly accepted, rules of thumb to go by when implementing the fair use excuse.
Intro. These days it seems that copyright law is everywhere, from lawsuits alleging that the multiplayer online battle game Fortnite infringed popular dance moves such as the floss, to the Ninth Circuit agreeing that Pharrell Williams and Robin Thicke's song Blurred Lines infringed Marvin Gaye's copyrighted hit song Got to Give It Up. As the internet and technology have become omnipresent in our lives, the constant availability of copyrighted content, from streamed music to photos and posts on social media, has led to the perpetuation of copyright myths. Unfortunately, these myths and numerous others have caused misconceptions over the rights of the copyright holder and the obligations of the user. The US Copyright Act is a strict liability statute. In other words, following a rule that you believe to be true but which turns out to be a myth will not excuse you from liability for infringement. Under certain circumstances, it is possible to plead innocent infringement, but even that only serves to reduce the amount of damages you may owe and does not excuse your infringement. Here are four of the most common copyright myths, debunked. The first myth is that anything to which the public has access, or that is publicly available, is in the public domain, i.e., if it's on the internet, it can be used without a license or other permission. This is far from the truth. Contrary to popular belief, whether a book, work of art, lyrics, sound recording, or other copyrightable work is in the public domain does not depend on where the work can be found. Instead, determining if a work is in the public domain depends on when the term of copyright protection for that work expired, or if it existed in the first place. Under current law, copyright protection for an original work of authorship fixed in any tangible medium of expression lasts for a long time, 95 years from the year of first publication for a work owned by an entity as a work made for hire, or the life of the author plus 70 years for works created by an individual author, regardless of publication status. The duration of copyright protection for works created prior to 1978 is subject to different requirements that relate to, 1, whether the work was published with copyright notice, and, 2, whether the work was registered and, if applicable, if the registration was renewed. Any works falling outside of those general parameters are part of the public domain, free for anyone to use for any purpose. One general rule to follow: currently, all works published prior to 1924, 95 years ago, are in the public domain. As of January 1, 2019, copyright-protected works published in 1923 entered the public domain, the first such influx of new public domain materials in decades. So in theory, the plays of William Shakespeare and the novels of Jane Austen, authors who are long deceased and whose works were first published well before 1924, are in the public domain. But be aware, Romeo and Juliet published with explanatory footnotes or Pride and Prejudice published with a new introduction may be protected by copyright law with respect to those footnotes and that introduction. Similarly, the Ninth Symphony of Ludwig van Beethoven, who died in 1827, is in the public domain, but a recent sound recording of an orchestra and choir performing the Ode to Joy would be protected by copyright law. Other works that fall into the public domain are works owned by the US government, which are not protected by the Copyright Act and are free for the public to use. Works owned by state governments also are part of the public domain. The 11th Circuit recently held that an annotation to Georgia's official code is similarly public domain material, even when prepared by a non-government entity. So, while many works of authorship created over the centuries are most certainly in the public domain, it is very likely that most creative works found on the internet or in other electronic media, such as digital photographs, blog posts, and e-books, are protected in whole or in part by copyright law. Using such works without permission or a license constitutes copyright infringement for which the unauthorized user can be liable for damages up to $150,000 per registered work infringed. The second myth is a theory that has endured for a very long time and remains surprisingly popular with freelance writers. Instead of registering the copyrights in a work with the US Copyright Office, the myth is that the protection of a poor man's copyright exists when an author mails himself or herself a copy of a work and then preserves the unopened envelope when he or she receives it in the mail. A variation of the theory is having the work notarized. Mailing yourself a copy of your work or having it notarized has no legal effect. While it may serve as evidence that the work is in your possession as of the date it was mailed or notarized, it in no way proves that you are the author who created that work or holds the rights in it. The only way to register a copyright and to have documentation of your ownership in a copyrightable work is to file an application with the Copyright Office, which leads us to the next myth. Unlike the first two debunked myths, there is some element of truth to the third myth, that registration with the Copyright Office is not necessary for a work to be eligible for copyright protection. But not registering the copyright in a work would be short-sighted and not recommended for anyone wanting to be able to enforce his or her copyrights. Under current law, registration with the Copyright Office is not required for works created after January 1, 1978. Provided a work is sufficiently creative and falls into certain enumerated categories, an author's work is protected by federal copyright law as soon as it is fixed in a tangible medium of expression. Copyright protection does not cover ideas, only the expression of those ideas. In other words, telling one or more friends about your idea for the next great American novel or of a portrait you wish to paint does not guarantee any rights under US copyright law. But as soon as the idea is expressed tangibly, for example, by writing the novel or painting the portrait, the work is protected by copyright law. Then, if someone copies the novel, painting, or other work of authorship without getting permission, the author can assert infringement. An author cannot bring a lawsuit for copyright infringement, however, without a certificate of registration from the Copyright Office. The U.S. Supreme Court recently affirmed in Fourth Estate Public Benefit Corporation v. WallStreet.com, LLC, that a registration of copyrights, and not merely an application filed with the Copyright Office, is required in order to file a lawsuit alleging copyright infringement. Similarly, unless the application for registration of copyrights is filed with the Copyright Office within 3 months of first publication of the work or prior to infringement, certain valuable remedies are not available to the copyright holder, including the right to receive statutory damages up to $150,000 per work infringed, attorney fees and costs, injunctions, and impounding and disposition of infringing articles. Additional benefits to registering copyrights include that registration made before or within 5 years after first publication of the work shall constitute prima facie evidence of the validity of the copyright and of the facts stated in the certificate. Registration also permits the copyright owner to establish a record with U.S. Customs and Border Protection to protect against the importation of infringing copies of a registered work. Furthermore, being able to attach a copy of a certificate of registration to a demand or cease and desist letter sent to an alleged infringer of a registered work will give the letter significant weight, and increase the likelihood that the infringer will stop the unauthorized use and, perhaps, even pay some damages to the copyright holder for the unauthorized use, and prevent the need for a costly litigation. So, while copyright registration is not technically required, paying the current application fee of $35 for a single work by an individual author who is also the claimant, with an electronic application, or $55 for all other electronic applications, is a bargain to entitle the copyright holder to all of these benefits. Anyone who posts a work on an internet website without first registering it risks unauthorized use, for which enforcement options would be limited. The final myth is that permission or a license is not needed if only a certain number of copies are made or a certain amount or percentage of the work is used, and that sticking to these arbitrary numbers automatically qualifies the unauthorized use as fair use under the Copyright Act. With acknowledgements for creativity, there is no bright line rule that making fewer than a certain number of copies or using less than a certain amount of a work somehow makes copyright infringement permissible under copyright law. Unless a use falls explicitly under one of the enumerated limitations on a copyright holder's exclusive rights set forth in the Copyright Act, permission must be sought from the rights holder to reproduce, distribute, publicly perform, publicly display, and/or create derivative works of a copyrightable work, whether or not it is registered with the Copyright Office. Moreover, to determine whether a use that does not fall into one of the statutory limitations qualifies as fair use, depends on the analysis and application of four non-exclusive factors. 1. The purpose and character of the use. 2. The nature of the copyrighted work. 3. The amount and substantiality of the portion used in relation to the copyrighted work as a whole, and 4. The effect of the use upon the potential market for or value of the copyrighted work. By way of example only, the Supreme Court held that the use of 300 words verbatim from a 200,000-word unpublished manuscript of the memoirs of former President Gerald Ford constituted copyright infringement, and the Sixth Circuit held that a filmmaker's repeated sampling of 2 seconds of a copyrighted sound recording similarly constituted infringement and not fair use. In short, do not rely on any so-called bright-line rule that purportedly allows use of a copyrighted work without permission based simply on arbitrary numbers. Always get permission from the rights holder, unless it is certain that your use is permitted by the Copyright Act.
While many discussions of copyright are reliable and based on law and fact, there are numerous misconceptions and inaccuracies that have become part of the public law regarding copyright. Not everything written on the internet about copyright law is true, even if it may be eligible for copyright protection. Creators and content users need to know the real copyright rules and follow them. Spread the word, in your own language, of course, without copying anyone else's content without permission. There are a few key considerations when protecting your work. First, authorship. As the owner or creator, a clear track record of how you yourself came up with the work is hugely influential. As often said in academic mathematical exams, there are benefits and protections in showing how you got to a particular result. Secondly, tangible representation. Give the concept a tangible representation, such as through drawings or writings and the like. Verbally sharing a description of a great idea does not constitute copyright protection.
TOF enables creation of both a public, immutable DLT results page, in tandem with formalized completion of various, privately owned copyright registrations. Each further has immutable double-blind blockchain, key, and timestamp verification. Biosphere copywriting generates privately tracked provenance, is end-to-end encrypted, blockchain secured, and ultimately, owned by you, the creators and rightful controllers.